superior news and issues from a superior point of view.
There's no shortage of Christmas music, but we'll hear some with a regional flair.
Winter's finally here and autumn's over.
But first,
I took a walk down to the ice.
Wisconsin's Ice Age Trail is now a national park. And we'll look back at a hiker who's gone the entire distance.
It was just like this dragging of my mind, slowly going through the snow, and I'm like, I'm never going to reach the end.
You were walking on ice.
Welcome to Simply Superior. I'm Robin Washington. Earlier this month, the National Park Service named the Ice Age Trail and the Wisconsin portion of the North Country National Scenic Trail as officially national parks. It's been long awaited by groups like the North Country Trail Association, and the designation comes just in time for winter, which may lead you to wonder who's going out on the trails at this time of year. Well, 3 years ago, one intrepid hiker from Duluth did just that. Emily Ford traversed the entire 1,100-mile Ice Age Trail across Wisconsin. Her companion was a borrowed sled dog named Diggins. We spoke with Emily in March 2021 after she completed her 10-week trek. In honor of the trail's new designation, here's our conversation from back then. Emily Ford is safe and sound and maybe still a little bit sore, and she joins me now from her Duluth home. Welcome to Simply Superior.
Thank you for having me.
So I know it wasn't a race, but your official time was, 69 days? Did you count minutes, hours, seconds?
I did not count down to that minutia. I should have, though.
And, well, I'll just go into one simple question, which I think might be like asking a mountaineer about the mountain. Why?
Well, you know what? It's so funny that the why question is such a common question. You know, why do we do anything that we love? I just wanted to get out and go on a trail that was, a 1,000 mile long. I've wanted to do a long through hike for a while. And I was out playing volleyball with a buddy. And she's like, well, what about the Ice Age Trail? And I was like, don't know what that is, but that sounds great. That's kind of how this all got kicked off, actually.
Well, but this wasn't your first, right? So I know that much. You've done the Superior Trail, or I think there may be more than one.
I have. I've done the Superior Hiking Trail. It's a beautiful trail. If you've never been on it, you should. And I've done some other shorter ones, but they are equally as relentless. The Border Route Trail, which borders the U.S. and Canada, kind of dipping into the Boundary Waters Wilderness, and the Kekakabik Trail, which is 42 miles, but literally in the middle of nowhere and beautiful.
Well, you found a lot of nowhere on this one. But the other part of this, as I alluded to, it was called the Ice Age Trail before you found out how cold it was. You did this in a winter. I'm told you are the second person to complete the trail in the winter. So I'm wondering, by the way, did you do the Superior Hiking Trail in the summer or winter? Or?
Yeah, so I work for Glensheen. I'm their head gardener. It's a historic mansion in town. And I get laid off for 3 months in the wintertime, just super rad. I love having 3 months off. And so this was really the only time I had to do that many miles all in one go. So that's the why for the winter. I did the Superior in a shoulder season. So I believe I did that in the fall. I did the Keck maybe in the summer. And I did the Border Route at the same time that I did the Superior Hiking Trail.
Mm-hmm.
So everything else I've done has either been in the fall or in the summer-ish time. So, yeah, it just so happened. And you know what? Here's the thing, though. Like, man, winter gets such a bad rap. Like, I wish it didn't, because it's the completion, right? It's the completion of our four seasons. You know what I mean? Like, don't forget how, when in the middle of winter, don't forget how much you complain about the humid summer, right? So we get the balance. We get those two very cold weeks every winter. We call it the polar vortex. And then we get those 2 weeks in the summer that are hotter than Hades, right? But there's beauty in both of them as well. So
right.
I'm hoping that more people, you know, get their time outside after me being home.
I'm not sure it completely balances out where we are. I mean, Duluth is called the air-conditioned city. And so, yeah, you say 2 weeks in the summer, maybe more like a week. And, you know, 90 degrees isn't quite the same as 30 below. So, but I do want to talk about that in terms of the hike, the trip. You went from, I think you had highs of 40 above to 37 below, right? So how in the world do you, at first, survive that? And then second, how do you pack for that?
Right. Yeah, so on those really cold nights, really awesome people allowed us to stay in their house. So the sleeping bag that I brought with me was rated for 30 below. But the wind chill was so cold. It was like 40-something below. I know, it sounds, I thought that was going to be good enough for this trip, but I was wrong. I really underestimated the Midwest. I should not have done that. So some really cool people let me in and dig in. So we stayed in people's houses, usually in their basements. But we would definitely hike through, during the day. That's how we did that. And how do you pack for it? I mean, it's all about layers, It's all about layers. It's not so much of how you stay warm. It's making sure that you don't sweat too much. Because when you're moving, right, when you're hiking, post-holing through deep snow or trudging through deep snow all day long, it's actually, no matter how cold it is, it's actually pretty easy to sweat. So even on, a 0-degree day, I would have a couple base layers on top and then just a raincoat and then mittens, a hat, and blah, blah, blah. But it's not like I would be bundled in a goose down jacket or anything like that. So, yeah.
All right. We are speaking with Emily Ford of Duluth, who last week completed her 10-week hike of Wisconsin's Ice Age Trail, stretching 1,100 miles from the Sturgeon Bay area near Green Bay to Polk County or St. Croix Falls via Janesville, which is not the fastest way to get there. And you are referring to yourselves plural. The plural part would be the dog Diggins, who was not your dog. Diggins was a borrowed sled dog. How was she recruited, and what was her job?
Yeah, so I found her just by posting to a Facebook group and asking people if I could borrow their dog, and I got one reply, and it was from Diggins' owner. And her job was, I don't know, originally it was just to be there. She's a puller, so she pulled along. She's ahead of me. She was tied to me via Skidorian belt. She was there kind of mostly for companionship. And she did a great job at both pulling and being a companion.
I had reached out to you by Facebook message. Of course, you were communicating with the entire world, and I saw that it was growing and growing. Your Instagram followers got to be quite plentiful. And I had asked if you were interested in talking to us, if we could do this piece we're doing now. But I was thinking, I try to be mindful of these things, that I don't really want to tell the whole world where Emily is at any particular time. We used to have a thing in my many years working in newspapers, not to say someone would be on vacation, because you were basically saying when to rob their house. Now, in the age of social media, everybody says, oh, I'm on vacation, and nobody seems to care anymore. All right. So, but all that being said, how mindful were you of safety? And did Diggins have a part in that? Or, what precautions did you take? Or am I just a worrywart?
You're not the first person to ask me that. I'm pretty liberal with my safety, I'm realizing. after this trip, so a lot of people had the question of, like, do I bring protection, blah, blah, blah. So I'm like, no, I have like a pocket knife and a dog, that's pretty much it. But people were, a couple of things. People were pretty mindful about not stating exactly where I was at the time. They had a pretty good idea. It's kind of hard to keep a secret of what county I was in. So if you needed to find me, you could at least figure out what county I'm in or was in, and all stuff like that. I didn't really run into any issues with people or animals. People were very kind to me on the trail. And I think if anybody that would have wanted, had any issue with the trip, I don't think they even paid attention to the story. So, yeah, that's that.
Well, you're getting also a bit of notice for helping to break stereotypes about African-Americans not being outdoors people. One of my closest friends in town is Dudley Edmondson, who has worked a lifetime on that front. And that stereotype is based on good reasons. Black people were not long welcome in national parks and other places like that. And just at the time of George Floyd's death, if we remember, I think the same week, there was a black bird watcher, Mr. Cooper, in Central Park, who had to deal with a white woman calling the police on him as she was breaking the law with her dog. So what's been the response, reaction?
Yeah, it was great. I think people are so excited to, you know, especially for people of color, right? We're just so excited to see other people doing something that we've always longed to do that isn't, recently, traditionally something that we do, right? So even if our ancestors were mainly outdoors, right? Gatherers, hunters, people farming, lots of farmers. Nowadays, it may not be as apparent to us that that's our history, actually. So there's been a great response, parents with their little kids, really encouraging their little kids to get outside. People my age outside and other adults who are older than me outside, just, I'm hoping that that message kind of came across clear of, like, my whole main shtick is just, like, if you don't feel like you check the right boxes, quote unquote, to do the thing, like, you totally do, like, especially in the outdoors, like, you're totally welcomed.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's coming across quite clear, and people responded really well to it.
What, in general, what did you think before you went on it would be the most challenging park, and what did it turn out to be?
You know what? I don't know if I even thought about things being challenging before I left. probably the cold, right? Just being like, all right, it's going to be cold. But I don't really remember being worried about the cold too much.
Yeah, you had that 30 below rated sleeping bag, right?
Well, yeah, so I had a really warm sleeping bag, but then also if you remember, the beginning of winter was actually quite lovely. Mm-hmm. About as lovely as the ending is. It was warm, and so I wasn't really worried about that. The hardest part, my hardest days were kind of getting over my own self, right, in my pace. So those days I had to post hole forever, it felt like I was going about at a half mile an hour. And like on a good day, I can hike 3 miles an hour. And it was just like this dragging of my mind slowly going through the snow. And I'm like, I'm never going to reach the end. And I would have never thought that post-holing was going to be my demise before I left.
What's the word you're using there again?
Oh, post-holing. Like when your foot goes through deep snow and it makes a post-hole. Uh-huh. And you have to just keep going through that. Because I left my snowshoes behind at a certain point on the trip because I didn't really need them.
Except that those moments, you kind of wish you had them.
I did, but it was really, really in my last 2 weeks. Out of almost 10 weeks, 2 weeks is, and it wasn't every day. It was like just moments in those 2 weeks. I don't regret the decision not bringing them through the whole thing because they're heavy and I would have had to carry them.
Right. Yep. That's always a consideration, how much you carry. What about how far you went in a day? Was it consistent, or did you have some days where you really blew through it, and other days those depressing moments that you just described?
Yeah. In the beginning, I would shoot for like 20-ish miles a day, between 15 and 20. Like I said, it was warm. The trails were pretty packed down, as in a pretty populated spot, or I had a lot of road walking to do, which is pretty easy. Then as I got towards the end, there's a terrible, terrible cliche saying, but I'll state it here anyway, it's smiles, not miles. And so just keeping yourself happy and not worried about all your mileage. And so actually towards the end, after I picked my end date officially, I chugged myself down to just reaching for 15 miles a day. And it was great.
Well, that's not too hokey of a cliche, and I can see how it really works, too. So, again, we're speaking with Emily Ford of Duluth, who last week completed her 10-week hike of Wisconsin's Ice Age Trail, which goes 1,100 miles, 1,136, I believe, from Sturgeon Bay to St. Croix Falls. What was the most unexpected or memorable thing that you saw along the way?
This is, I don't know if this is exciting for anybody else besides me or not, so I'll try to describe it in good enough detail. I did not know that grouse buried themselves in the snow, and you cannot tell where they are. Like, especially if you're not looking for them, you have no idea where they are. So one day, Biggins and I are walking along a trail, and out of the earth, out of the snowy earth, bursts 3 grouse, like popcorn, out of the snow. And they fly away. And if you've ever heard a grouse fly, they're pretty clumsy flyers, so they kind of clap their wings as they go along. I don't know if I was scared or whatever, but I just fell to my knees and started laughing so hard. It was the craziest thing I've ever seen in my entire life, and it was wonderful.
Ah. Well, you weren't hunting them, but that does lead me to ask, what were you doing for food? And what was Diggins doing for food?
Mm-hmm. So a lot of trail magic happened. Trail magic is when people magically appear with things that you need or want. So through the day, I ate a lot of Clif bars, a lot of like Luna bars, Pro bars, stuff like that, a lot of bars. Lots of candy, lots of Snickers is what I ate, lots of nuts, lots of dried fruit. And that night, I would have freeze-dried food, so like a Mountain House or Alpine Air. We just add a little bit of water to it. And Diggins, she had her own kibble. Her kibble's by Red Paw, and that's what she had. She had that and any other roadkill she could find during the day or other carcasses.
So after 1,100 miles, are we still sore, or does it become a throbbing pain that you just get used to, or how's that been?
Yeah, as soon as I got back, I have a massage therapist in Duluth. I am so mindful of my muscles. My body is really important to me, and I'm not a fitness guru, but I want to be a strong human being for as long as I can. So he's worked with me for a long time. So I booked two days worth of sessions with like 4.5 hours of work. So we're looking pretty good. My body feels great. I just went for a hike today and it was awesome.
Well, if anyone deserves a 2-day session, you do. So has this changed your life in any way?
I think so. I mean, I still love backpacking as much as I did before. So maybe not in that essence, but it's changed my life I never thought that I would be part of the onslaught of other folks of color who try to encourage people to, be outside and, be a face of color outdoors. Mm-hmm. So that's very new to me. And that's awesome. I don't generally do interviews every day.
Well, I was about to say, aside from the angle of color, if that's the way we put it, you are getting a lot of attention. I see The Guardian has done a story about you. Of course, all of our local media, and you hit the big time with our show. You know that. So
yes, I'm at the top.
But you are getting attention. Both again, helping to spread the idea that people of color can and do go in the outdoors, and just in general for someone who, again, the second person to actually do this whole route. Would you do it again, or do you have other hikes in the immediate future plan?
Nothing in the immediate future. That's like, once work starts up, for all you gardeners out there, you understand, like, once the season kind of hits, you're kind of tied to the gardens for that season. But I don't know what I'll do next winter. I'll probably go on a few week-long hikes at least this year and mm-hmm. get that taken care of. Who's to say, man? Who's to say?
All right. One more thing. Have you talked to Diggins since you got back?
Yeah, her mom sent me a video of her. I think I have some stuff to – I have some appointments to do in the cities, which is pretty close to where she lives. And I think I will go down and see her and play with her for a little bit, because I miss her immensely. I know that I made a wise decision to not ask to keep her. My life does not support her lifestyle, which is that she needs to be out, and about and running around and pulling and everything else pertinent every day. And I just can't support that with my lifestyle. But even though I know it was a wise decision, it still hurts my heart a little bit that she's not with me every day. But I do have a dog at home. He's pretty cool. I love him, so not all is lost.
All right. Well, when you do stop by and see Diggins, tell her to give us a call, because, you shouldn't take all the limelight here. And I'm sure we could have a very good interview, right?
She's really chatty, actually. It's amazing. You'd be surprised.
Great. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much. This has been great.
That was my conversation in March 2021 with Duluth hiker Emily Ford after her completion of a 10-week trek crisscrossing Wisconsin on the Ice Age Trail. Earlier this month, the trail was named an official national park. Coming up, regional artists share their Christmas songs.
walking on ice.
Welcome back to Simply Superior. I'm Robin Washington. Everyone from Elvis to Death Row Records has released a Christmas album, so why not our local performers? Well, Troubadours Wyatt Thompson and Thomas King of Northwest Wisconsin and Minnesota's David Harlan have answered that call, and they're here to share their songs with us. Welcome to Wisconsin Public Radio, Wyatt, Tom, and David.
Thank you for having us, Robin.
Yeah, thanks, Robin.
We'll hear Christmas songs from each of you in a bit, but let's get started with one we played a snippet of a couple of weeks ago when Teague Alexi joined us on the show. Here's Teague with Christmas Bells, Holiday Drums.
Follow the sound, those old Christmas bells, let them take you back to the first Noel.
That was Christmas Bells, Holiday Drums by Teague Alexi. We played a snippet of it a couple of weeks ago when Teague was on the show. We're joined now by Wyatt Thompson, Dave Harlan, and Thomas King. Tom, you've got one called Perfect Christmas Tree. What's so perfect about it?
Well, Robin, I think Christmas songs are mostly story songs, and they have nostalgia to them. They bring back memories. So our Perfect Christmas Tree is based on a story, a true story, written by Jim Bishop, a friend of mine who lives in the Spooner area. And Jim was selling trees for the Scouts, and a woman came in and wanted an imperfect tree. And it turned out that she had a number of special kids, she calls them, and she wanted the imperfect tree so they would get a chance to be creative and to make ornaments and to hang tinsel and lights and gifts in ways that you had to think about it. It's just a brilliant story that he wrote. And I asked him if I could have the rights to make a song from it. And that's Our Perfect Christmas Tree.
Well, that is a perfectly fine story, Tom King. And here is Our Perfect Christmas Tree by Thomas King.
Just the right one for our home. Yes, our perfect Christmas tree. Of all the trees to choose from, one was such a sight to see. Gnarled and twisted, branches bent, it had to go for free. That doesn't matter to us, the nice lady said to me. With love and our ideas, I think that it might be just the right one for our home. Yes, our perfect Christmas tree. Out in the big parking lot, I was selling trees, helping out our scouts in a snowy winter breeze. A woman stopped and looked around. She asked if she might find a scraggly tree with branches out was what she had in mind. I said I have one stashed out back, we're hesitant to sell. It's short and ill-proportioned and it doesn't show so well. I brought it out into the light so she could clearly see. Thrilled, she sighed, that's perfect. That's our Christmas tree. Of all the trees to choose from, one was such a sight to see. Gnarled and twisted, branches bent, it had to go for free. That doesn't matter to us, the nice lady said to me. With love and creativity, I know that it should be just the right one for our home, yes, our perfect Christmas tree. She handed me a 20, I tried to give it back. She said, our kids have special needs, just put it on my rack. They'll fill it in with tinsel lights and ornaments they've made. They will surely love this tree and I want you to be paid. Well, tears came up into my eyes, I thought of happy smiles. Kids putting bulbs and presents up and laughing all the while. Merry Christmas, she called out, then drove off in the storm. Snow swirled in the cold winds, yet now I felt so warm. Oh, of all the trees to choose from, one was such a sight to see. Gnarled and twisted, branches bent, it had to go for free. That doesn't matter to us, the nice lady said to me. With love from all our special kids, I know that it will be just the right one for our home, yes, our perfect Christmas tree. Just the right one for our home, yes, our perfect Christmas tree.
And that was Our Perfect Christmas Tree by Thomas King of Solent Springs. Wyatt Thompson, you have something that sounds like it might be Christmas blues. Christmas time, I'm so lonesome. Tell us about it.
It is kind of a chipper melody with more of melancholy lyrics, I guess. Kind of about the holidays being kind of a lonely time of year for some people.
But you said a chipper melody.
Yeah, but yeah, it has a fun melody.
Well, it's important for us to take all of it and really seriously a reminder that it's, you know, not all cheerful for everybody, certainly in this world today. So here is Christmas, I'm So Lonesome by Wyatt Thompson.
Winter's finally here and autumn's over. The frost upon the clovers has turned to fresh white snow. All the couples go to one another. They all have each other. I ain't got no one to hold. I'm so lonesome when it gets to be Christmas time again. And I ain't got nobody to call my own. You'd be lonesome too if only you felt the way I do. You have no one waiting when you come home. I don't want no Christmas tree. I don't want no pretty lights. It's flashing white and red and green. I just want someone to hold. Alone, just her and me. We can cozy by the fire. Throwing New Year's Eve. Everybody's always so excited. They all get invited to all the great big parties. Everybody's acting so delighted. yet I'm never invited, so I ain't got no place to be. I'm so lonesome when it gets to be Christmas time again, and I ain't got nobody to call my own. You'd be lonesome too if only you felt the way I do, and you had no one waiting when you come home. Christmas tree, I don't want no pretty lights flashing white and red and green. I just want someone to hold, alone just her and me. We can cozy by the fire and roll the New Year's tree. I'm so lonesome when it gets to be Christmas time again.
And that was Christmas Time, I'm So Lonesome by Wyatt Thompson of Philville Records. We're going to call that Christmas Blues, perhaps. David Harlan, you want to uplift us with a familiar tune? Your album Christmas Presents is mostly standards, correct?
It is, other than there's one solo instrumental original piece called Wanderlust that's on it as well. That's one I composed, but the rest are standards.
Well, they may be standards, but they definitely showcase your individuality. Let's hear Carol, or tell me a little bit about Carol the Bells for guitar.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's just it's a classic piece and kind of a haunting melody, and it's been done a million ways, and it kind of works in any genre, really. But so I thought how to do this for fingerstyle guitar and have a big spacious solo instrument cover the whole song, and that's what I came up with, and I'm happy with how it turned out.
All right, well, here is Carol of the Bells by David Harlan.
Thank you.
And that was Carol of the Bells by David Harlan from his album Christmas Presents. Where can we hear more of your music, beginning with you, David?
So davidharlanmusic.com. You can find links to all my stuff there, but I'm on all the streaming platforms, Spotify, Apple Music, SoundCloud, you name it, Bandcamp. It's everywhere you can find music.
All right. And Tom King?
With our newest song here, Our Perfect Christmas Tree, it is just coming out. We've just done a studio demo on it and are going to be bringing it out fairly soon after the year. It happened rather quickly here. Our other albums are at halbjorn.com, H-A-L-L-B-J-O-R-N.com. Halbjorn means rock bear in Icelandic, and our very first Icelandic ram that we had with our sheep flock was Halbjorn. So Halbjorn, H-A-L-L-B-J-O-R-N.com.
And Wyatt Thompson, where can we learn more about your music?
You can find me either on like Spotify. I'm on YouTube, all their streaming platforms. The Philville Records website is where you'll find the majority of my stuff. I do have a album that's going to be coming out within the next, I don't know, hopefully 6 months.
And Philville is spelled P-H-I-L-L-V-I-L-L-E. And we also want to give a shout out to Teague Alexi, who we started out with, and whose music can be found at TeagueAlexi.com. That's T-E-A-G-U-E, Alexi, A-L-E-X-Y. We've been joined by Wyatt Thompson, Tom King, and David Harlan, whose original tune, Wonderbus, will go out to. Thank you, gentlemen, or shall I say merry gentlemen, for joining us.
Thanks for having us. Appreciate it, Robin. Yeah.
Merry everything, Robin.
Regional News and Review. Welcome back to Simply Superior. I'm Robin Washington, and we're joined by Rick Lubbers of the Duluth News Tribune. Hello, Rick.
Hi, Robin.
And Maria Lockwood of the Superior Telegram. Hello, Maria.
Hi, Robin.
So, Rick, you've been telling us about the new flag design for the state of Minnesota. Which one did they finally choose?
Yes, Minnesota will have a new flag complete with the 8-point North Star in a blue field shaped like the state of Minnesota and a single light blue block to the other side of it. The State Emblems Redesign Commission on Tuesday finalized a flag design for Minnesota after months of work, and more than 2,000 designs were submitted for consideration. Pair designers recommended that the panel keep a symmetrical Minnesota shape and limit the colors to shades of white and blue, eliminating multicolored bars on the flag's right side. Members accepted those suggestions and said the final product would better represent Minnesota than the state's current design. The 8-point star isn't unique to Minnesota and appears in settings around the globe, but the group redesigning the flag hopes that it becomes known as the Minnesota Star. It'll be oriented so that one point is facing due north. While the flag won't spell out Minnesota, panel members of the symbols will clearly signal it. The legislature set up a panel and tasked it with selecting a new flag and seal before the end of this year. DFL lawmakers raised concerns about the existing flag being too cluttered and insensitive to some groups because of the way it portrays a Native American man riding off into the sunset as a white farmer tills the land. The design will replace Minnesota's existing state flag on Statehood Day, which is May 11, unless the legislature intervenes. The finished flag will wind up as a compilation of ideas from multiple submissions. The star was swapped in from other entries, and the state shape came as a late suggestion from another designer. It is subtle, but it does resemble the state of Minnesota's shape.
Well, now I got a new way of looking at it. On more sobering news, you have a report on a serious crime from quite a while ago that many people are still grieving over.
Yes, the man who killed three men at an East Hillside neighborhood home in 1994 will continue to serve a 50-year sentence after a state board rejected his petition for release. The Minnesota Board of Pardons denied Todd Michael Warren's petition for release at a meeting Tuesday, according to the Minnesota Department of Corrections. The board, which is made up of Minnesota Governor Tim Walz, Attorney General Keith Ellison, and Supreme Court Chief Justice Natalie Hudson, voted unanimously against the move after more than 30 minutes of deliberations. 48-year-old Warren was 18 when he gunned down Keith Hermanson, Peter Moore, and Samuel Witherspoon inside 816 East 7th Street in the early morning of March 28, 1994. Serving three life sentences for premeditated murder, Warren applied this summer with the Minnesota Board of Pardons, seeking to have the remaining portion of his court-ordered incarceration reduced. Warren said he takes full responsibility for the crime that shocked the city and still resonates with many longtime residents today, but he asserts that he has been humbled by a nearly three-decade prison stay. Warren's request was supported by letters from family, friends, and prison associates, but it received significant pushback from the victims' families and County Attorney Kim Mackey, who called the crime one of the most grievous in the history of St. Louis County. Warren testified that he saw his girlfriend's friend being sexually assaulted and then his girlfriend with her clothing partially removed. Warren left the party with his girlfriend and other friends, drove to his parents' home, retrieved his father's .44 Magnum revolver, and returned to the East Hillside home. Witnesses said he shot Witherspoon, who was celebrating his 21st birthday, and then shot 20-year-old Hermanson and 21-year-old Moore. Warren admitted to shooting the victims, but claimed he did not remember many key details. A Duluth jury in January 1995 found Warren guilty on all three murder charges, and he was sentenced to three life terms, but imposed them concurrently, ruling that the defendant could petition for parole after 30 years. Warren is currently at the medium security state prison in Moose Lake. He has eight minor infractions on file and none since 2015.
All right, and in a far more recent story, there's been some resolution in the hazing case involving the Proctor football team in 2021.
Yes, the Proctor School District and the family of a former football player have reached a settlement in the federal lawsuit stemming from a 2021 incident in the football locker room there. The parties reached an agreement in October, according to court documents, and that avoids a trial and allows the defendants, which included the school district, former coach Derek Parendo, former superintendent John Engelking, and several assistant coaches, to omit no wrongdoing. The financial terms of the settlement are confidential, but stipulate that the victim will receive an annual payout of 13% of the settlement. After that, they'll receive equal monthly payments for the next 10 years with the remainder of the balance disbursed at the end of that period. The victim's parents filed the lawsuit on behalf of the victim in August 2022, following the 2021 incident that rocked the Proctor community. The lawsuit centered on an incident September 26, 2021 that resulted in the cancellation of the football season, a sexual assault conviction for a former Proctor football player, and the resignation of Parendo. The football player, Alec Bainey, was accused of sexually assaulting the victim with a toilet plunger after practice that day, with several other teammates reportedly holding down the victim while the assault took place. Bainey was sentenced in June to supervised probation until his 21st birthday after pleading guilty in juvenile court to felony third-degree criminal sexual conduct. The suit alleged that prior to and during Parendo's time as coach, there was a prevalent practice of hazing rituals involving a toilet plunger. The complaint also alleges that all the defendants condoned student-on-student sexual and physical harassment by downplaying the incidents and failing to educate staff and student-athletes about the dangers of hazing. According to the complaint, the victim suffered embarrassment, humiliation, fear of retaliation, intimidation, breach of trust, anxiety, depression, and pain and suffering.
All right. Well, Maria, on the Wisconsin side, there's been discussion of new permits for those heading out to the woods.
Correct. Now, these are ideas. They have to be approved by the Douglas County Board on January 18th, but they're considering a number of new and increased fees for forestry permits, including among those, there would be separate permits for renting the Bird Sanctuary Clubhouse or the horse stable, because right now you have to rent both of them. This would allow folks to rent one or the other, because there are a lot of groups who come in and just want the stable or just want the clubhouse. This allows them to rent out both at the same time. Another permit they're looking at is providing water and electricity to campers at the county's campgrounds, and to create a new permit that would allow individuals to get balsam fir boughs in small quantities out in the county forest. Now, that is one that they tried out this year, and it's been a big hit. For $10, people can go and get up to 2 large armloads of balsam boughs to make wreaths out of. And according to the forestry department, it has been a big hit. Also available, but it's a little late for everyone now, they do offer a Christmas tree permit, which allows people to pay $5 per tree and go out and cut their own down on county forestry lands. The fees, once again, will be before the county board on January 18th.
Okay. And finally, the Douglas County Sheriff's Department has a new furry colleague.
Correct. K-9 Kip and his partner, Deputy Justin McIntosh, started work with the department on December 14th. In their first weekend on the job, they went to a Hawthorne Fire Department children's party and tracked down a felon who was wanted on a warrant. So they've already got a little bit of work under their belt. K-9 Kip is a German Shepherd, and he was donated to the department by McDonough K-9 out of Anoka, Minnesota. The Northland K-9 Foundation has also stepped up to provide $20,000 worth of equipment and training for Kip and his partner, Justin McIntosh. Kip is very, very energetic, and he loves his ball on a string, and that is what he works for. He's 65 pounds and 20 months old. They've spent the last 15 weeks in training down in the cities, and they are going to be on the job with 2 other canine teams. Now, the oldest canine team in the department is K-9 Talon, who joined the department in 2014, but he is still a working dog. And they also have K-9 Sam, who joined in 2020. Both of those are Belgian Malinois.
All right. Well, we'll be happy to have Kip on the show if you can arrange that.
Just be prepared for a lot of dog slobber, apparently. Deputy McIntosh said that's the one thing nobody warned him about is what this would do to his uniforms.
All right. Well, we've been speaking with Maria Lockwood, reporter for the Superior Telegram. Thank you, Maria.
Thank you, Robin.
And Rick Lubbers, executive editor of the Duluth News Tribune. Thank you, Rick.
Thanks, Robin.
You can stay updated on these stories and all the regional news anytime at WPR.org, SuperiorTelegram.com, and DuluthNewsTribune.com. And that's it for this edition of Simply Superior. We leave you with more holiday music from a regional artist, one of our most famous, Galen Lee. I'm Robin Washington. Enjoy the holidays and stay safe, everyone.